This is the Moth Radio Hour from PRX. I'm Jay Allison, producer of this show. And the next story this hour is from Nora McLaughlin, recorded at the State Theater, Kalamazoo. The theme of the evening was Between Worlds.
So I've loved maps ever since I was a little kid. My mom used to take me on these long nature hikes. And my favorite part was running along stuck with my nose in the map that we'd picked up at the trailhead. I would tug at her sleeve over and over again and say, Mom, where are we? And it must have driven her completely nuts because she would only ever take the map out of my hands and point up. There's usually this beautiful green light filtering down through the canopy of trees, and my mother would turn to me and say, Nora, we are here. And she had no idea how frustrating that philosophy can be to a three-year-old. Because childhood is basically a forced march on a path that someone else has picked out for you. I loved maps because they let me imagine that there would be a time when I would not, in fact, be here, but somewhere else, somewhere better, London or Manhattan or Narnia. And sometimes I was this really weird, nerdy kid growing up in rural upstate New York, and it seemed like the only way to get through it all without going completely nuts was to keep my head down and my nose in the map that the grown-ups had handed to me. So for years, that's what I did. I got good grades, I went to church, I got into a good college and found a nice boyfriend. And yet somehow when I graduated from college and I found myself facing that uncharted space of adult life, I didn't feel the freedom that I thought I would. I only felt fear. And I thought I understood why medieval cartographers had drawn sea monsters at the edges of the known world. Something inside of me was saying, here, there be dragons. The good news is that where one map ends, you can always pick up a new one. And for me, the first one I reached out for was graduate school. I enrolled in basically the first program that would have me, which turned out to be a master's in Gregorian chant and ritual song at the World Academy of Music and Dance in Limerick, Ireland. Before that, I had this whole summer to fill, right? And I felt like I needed something even more tangible, a real roadmap to feel like I was moving forward in the right direction. And I finally found it in something called the Camino de Santiago. It's a 500-mile Catholic pilgrimage across the north of Spain. And while it may seem like Catholic pilgrimages, you know, like walking 500 miles to gain an indulgence for your sins from the Pope is the kind of thing may have gone out of style in the Middle Ages. Catholic pilgrimages were actually really popular in my family. My maternal grandmother followed apparitions of the Virgin Mary the way some people follow the Grateful Dead. And she'd been to Fatima, she'd been to the Holy Land, but even my grandmother had never done the Camino. So in addition to filling my summer, I could get some really good family piety points. The only hitch in this whole situation was that my boyfriend at the time wanted to go with me. And this might not seem like such a problem, but I knew that I was keeping a couple secrets from this guy. The first was that I'd always had a complex relationship with my faith, and I was starting to test out the idea that maybe I had a vocation to the Catholic Church. Maybe I was going to become a nun. And the second secret, not entirely unrelated to the first, was that I never told him that the week before he and I started dating, the year before, I'd finally gotten up the courage to kiss this girl that I had a huge crush on at a party. And I had immediately panicked because I knew that going any further down that road would mean the end of this very well-mapped good girl life that I had worked very hard for. Under these circumstances, you might think that taking this guy along would be the worst possible idea, and you would be right. But I was starting to think that maybe walking 500 miles with someone who was starting to really annoy me would be my penance for not appreciating this beautiful life that I had that was so good on paper. And that's how it was that I woke up in a pilgrim's hostel in eastern Spain, being shaken awake by this boyfriend who was telling me that the pilgrim we'd walked over the Pyrenees with that morning, a man in his 60s bunking next to us, had just died of a heart attack while I slept. And I knew already that people died at the beginning and the end of the Camino. You see the tombstones over the Pyrenees, and you see them again at the end at Monte del Gozo. A lot of pilgrims say that the Camino originally wasn't a Catholic pilgrimage road, but was a Celtic initiation ritual, and that the first stage over the Pyrenees tests your physical strength, the long, boring stretch in the middle tests your mental endurance, and the beautiful countryside at the end in Galicia expands your spiritual consciousness. And it seemed to be the first and the last that really get you. But we still had to go to Pamplona the next day. So we get there during the festival of San Fermín, the running of the bulls. And my boyfriend thinks that this is super awesome. He's started this bromance of the road with this kid going into the Peace Corps in Azerbaijan. And as soon as we get into the city, they run off and go to buy their white t-shirts and their red bandanas, seemingly with no idea that for me, being alone in this sea of drunkenness and testosterone is a very different experience than the one that they're having. And that night, as we sleep exposed on a tarp in the park, I feel the resentment start to build as my boyfriend snores and I'm lying there with my heart pounding, watching these stumbling shadows and hearing this mean laughter. But we still have a ways to go. Somewhere in the meseta, at a little town called Rabanal del Camino, we run into this group of very, very conservative Catholics who are traveling with their parish priest, and they're going to give a Latin mass. And for me, going into this program in Gregorian chant, I think, you know, seeing a Latin mass on the Camino de Santiago, that's going to be some real social currency. I'll be the cool kid in my program. So I go to the Latin mass, and in my usual perfectionist, good girl fashion, I'm sitting there watching what everybody else is doing because I want to make sure that I get the ritual perfect the first time. And when I watch people go up for communion, I notice that they're all taking it on their tongues instead of in their cupped hands, which is easy enough, I can do that. So I walk up, I get to the priest, and I put out my tongue for communion, and it doesn't arrive. And the priest says something angrily to me in French, and then he repeats it in English. "Do you understand me?" he says. "On your knees." And I don't understand at first. It takes me a second. And then I realize that those people I was studying in line ahead of me were men. And I'm being asked to kneel because I'm a woman. And I've spent my whole life bending myself around the desires and the expectations of other people. And in that moment, I just felt something intractable rise up in me that just said, no. No. And I turned and I walked out of the church. And as I pushed open those heavy wooden doors and stepped out into the night, I didn't feel angry. I didn't feel triumphant. Just felt deep sadness that this thing that here I was trying to be so good for would never think that I was good enough. So 3 days from Santiago, I learn on a phone call home that my maternal grandmother, the Catholic pilgrimage roadie, has passed away, and I will not be able to go home for the big Irish Catholic wake and funeral that's important to us. And I'm racking my brain for something that I can do. The only thing I can come up with is that I'll walk those last 3 days to Santiago all in one day and light a candle for her in the cathedral there. I want that something tangible. I want creating light from light. My grandmother passed life to my mother, who passed it to me, and I want to light her a candle. So I get to the steps of the cathedral completely exhausted. And as I walk up those stairs, I don't realize that there's still one disappointment left. Because I get to the flickering bank of candles, and there's a little box on the side that says, "Put your coin in this slot. Your electric candle will be lit for 1 hour." And I leave Santiago feeling cheated. I feel like the map has failed me, because I don't feel the grace that's supposed to come at the end of doing that much penance. But then I think, if the map has failed me, I'm allowed to fail the map in return. And that's what I do. I drop out of my master's program, and I break up with that boyfriend. And I start dating that girl from that party, because she's the thing in my life that feels like light. And that's when I'm able to start thinking a little differently about those medieval men and their outdated maps. Because with sea monsters, they were trying to tell us that the only way forward is on a path that's already been traveled by somebody else. We can laugh at their maps now, because we know that there have always been explorers. There have always been the brave ones among us, willing to sail through the fear that lies between the shore that you know really well and the shore that you've only dreamed about. To put down the map and look up, to be guided by the stars. Thank you.
That was Nora McLaughlin. Nora grew up in the blizzard belt of upstate New York, where, she says, she learned to pass the long winter nights knitting sweaters, telling stories, and reading promiscuously. The Moth Radio Hour is produced by Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and presented by PRX. We hope The Moth inspires you to make a pledge of support to your public radio station, and if so, this would be a great time to do it.